You know the last player to win the MVP in this franchise? Joe Theismann in 1983. Jaden Daniels, odds-wise, has climbed into the top 10 pretty much across the board in the MVP conversation after four games. Jumping on with me right now is one of the greatest to ever do it in the history of this franchise. Number seven, Joe Theismann. This has been fun. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Kevin. It sure has been a lot of fun. It's just, for me, it's the process of watching Jaden get better each week. I love the way he's playing football. I love the way the team's playing football. I mean, how can you not? Every aspect of the game. I mean, you search for a kicker all through preseason. You found one that made seven field goals. It's like, okay, it's about time the stars started aligning for us in a positive way. But Jaden's just been such a delight to watch play.
All right, so you mentioned sort of the progress. Just take me through your thoughts of what we saw week one and now where he is after just 4 weeks.
Well, there's a couple things that stand out. Number one is you see his patience in the pocket grow. I think in the first couple of games he was in a hurry to get out. Because he knows he can run. He knows he can get away. He understands the lanes to be able to escape through. And he was, anxious to do that to a degree. And there isn't a rookie in the National Football League that comes in and plays the quarterback position that can honestly tell you when they drop back, they know what they're looking at. It's just so complex on the other side of the ball. And he has continued to progress in that manner, to identify. And the reason I know that is because you can see him stay in the pocket just a little bit longer, which means he's looking for the routes that have been designed for him. And he's understanding where the players are. I'll give you an example. Will Levis, okay, been what? This is his third year in the league, second year in the league. In the league. The game the other night, in the Miami game, you see the shot of him on the sideline saying, I didn't see him when the linebacker picked off the pass. Jaden's seeing things, and that's so vitally important for the team to be able to continue to move the ball, but it's important for him to be able to progress. The other thing, early on, I think he just took off, and we saw him take a couple of shots in the early games. Now he's sliding, he's running out of bounds and protecting himself. I think he's sick and tired of people telling him to do that, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Because everybody's reminding him, hey, look, get down, get down, get down. And it's almost like when he slides, he gets up with a smile on his face. He's basically saying to everybody, Steve, I can do it.
How rare is it, when you said, he's seeing things, how rare is it that he is seeing things four games into his pro career this early?
I think it's rare. I think he's a rare, exceptional individual to be able to process. That's, it's not to say that, he's reached his status, 82% completion percentage, unheard of. You're sort of waiting for the shoe to fall and say, okay, what happens? We haven't seen him deal with adversity yet. That's the next phase in the growth at the quarterback position. I mean, if he can go through a season and have this kind of success and this kind of completion percentage, let's erect the statue, okay? Let's just do that because that's how exceptional it would be. But, it's hard because they throw a lot at you. Defensive coaches, they spend hours and hours and hours looking at you and what you do well and what you don't do well, and they're going to force you to do the things that you don't do well. For example, a lot of guys, I used to escape out the back door. When I sort of got away from trouble, I sort of pivoted and went left. Well, then you start finding they tell that defensive end on the right side, sit there and wait for him. We're going to pressure him from the front side. We're going to force him into your lap. And with Jaden's been able to escape both ways and find the lanes. The other thing he's doing is, in the beginning, he took off just to run, Kevin. Now what we're seeing is him get out of the pocket and look for people downfield. He's looking to get the ball out of his hands. Once again, the growth process. The processing of the offenses, too, I think is a little bit easier for him because having gone to Arizona State, then transferring to LSU, he's used to offensive changes. And you, I can't say this enough. And every time I talk to somebody about Jaden, you can't talk about Jaden without talking about Cliff Kingsbury.
That's what I was going to ask you next.
And the job that he has done, getting the ball early in games out of Jaden's hands, just having him find a comfort level. You know, in the beginning of a game, everybody's a little nervous. Somebody tells you they're not alive. And so you want to get those completions. You want to be able to get the ball out of your hands. And then he starts to work into the offense. Plus, the running game has been solid. I mean, he's at 46 carries. B. Rob has got 66. But they're judicious in their choice of when he takes off to run. I mean, every game I watch, I sit there with a big smile on my face, just so proud of watching this young man play football.
What about just his overall demeanor, Joe? I mean, from the jump, I mean, there's a calmness, there's a poise, which is the word everybody uses. Just speak to that for a little bit and how important it is.
Well, Kevin, I use one word to describe the whole situation, and it's called Heisman. He won the Heisman because he was the best player in college. He's been this type of a player for a while. You know, at LSU all last year, he was this kind of a football player. You know, that's a pressure-packed place to be.
Yeah.
I mean, collegiately, sometimes those arenas are tougher to play in than they are
right.
at the professional level. And you know, he's handled the publicity. He's handled the notoriety. I think the one thing that I really, really love about him is he has a great understanding of who he is. He knows who he is. He knows he can play the game, but he doesn't wear it. You know, you talk to him, it's not like, I've been around a lot of young guys, and they think they're really, really good. You know, and when you do the things that Jaden does, you have a right to feel that way, but he doesn't show it. He has a wonderful calm about him. And like you say, hey, look, I understand it's my job. I understand I'm part of this football team. I understand my job is to do everything we can to help us win. I used to have a slogan, Kevin, in my locker, and it came on me, you know, after about I spent 12 years in the league, and probably after I started in 79, I put a sign up that says, you never have to be the reason a team wins, you just can't be the reason it loses. And that is not physical, that's mental. That's making the right decisions with the ball in your hand. That's throwing the ball away, that's protecting yourself, that's getting out of bounds. The most important thing Jaden can continue to do is to keep himself available to play and practice so he can continue to learn.
We're talking to Joe Theismann. You know, Dan Quinn said something, and I've referenced it several times, even recently. He said it at some point during the spring. He said it's very, very hard for a young player with the kind of expectations that people have for him to come into a locker room with, you know, mostly older people and do two things. Inspire confidence that he is totally capable of playing the position and doing it in a way in which he also has humility. And it doesn't come off as off-puttingly arrogant. And I think you kind of were implying that to a certain degree.
Kim.
And, you know, I always think about you, you know, when we have these conversations, because your situation was much different. You came in with two veteran quarterbacks, you know, in a very veteran organization. But how hard is it to hit that, you know, inside straight of, oh, my God, this guy's great. And also, oh, my God, he doesn't have all the answers.
Well, I think you have to credit Adam Peters. I think you have to credit Dan Quinn, the coaching staff. Quarterback coach, offensive coordinator. You know, you've got a great product to work with in Jaden. You've got a great young man to work with. And I think they did a terrific job of putting a group of veterans. This is a very veteran football team. Remember, this football team, I'm guessing, on day one started, half the football team had not started for the Commanders.
Right. I think more than
half. So basically, it's a new football team.
Right.
And the blend of veterans are like, okay, you have to prove yourself by your play, not by anything you say. You can't be braggadocious, or you can't say certain things. You just go out and play. Your play will dictate the respect that you're going to get. You know, locker rooms are a very interesting dynamic of a family. Not everybody's going to get along all the time. There's going to be issues every now and then. But the most important thing that has to exist in that locker room is respect for one another. The time he puts in. I was listening to Dan yesterday on the radio. He was talking about, well, they stayed out west. When they left Cincinnati, they went out west for 8 days to get ready to play Arizona. And, you know, he said, you know, everybody's, you know, curfew's coming up. And who's in the film room? Jaden and the quarterbacks. They're in there communicating, talking, as well as other players, with Terry and the other guys. This is a football team that really, really, really understands they want to grow and get better. And the only way they can do it is to put the time in. And that's never been a problem for Jaden. You know, I talked to Mike Denbrock, who was his offensive coordinator down at LSU, who's now the offensive coordinator at Notre Dame. And Mike said, the one thing you're never going to have to worry about with Jaden is preparing to play. He's a very, very diligent worker. He studies hard and he works hard. And to me, that's more than half the battle for young guys.
Have you spent time talking to him?
Yeah, we spent a little bit of time. I saw him last week. You know, just I just walk up and I like I said, when I just love the smile on his face. Every time I see him, he's got a smile on his face.
Right.
And the one thing he said to me, which was great, he says, "I'm having fun," and that's it. You know, this is a game. I'm coaching some 9-year-old kids a little bit, and they're having fun. And I see that same little effervescent light in Jaden that, you know, that bright, that shines bright. Hey, I'm having fun. Now, you know, like I said, the bumps haven't come, and hopefully they won't, but inevitably they do in this business. But, you know, again, he understands the road that's ahead of him, and he understands the road that he's on. I've enjoyed, you know, brief visits with him. I really appreciate him. Like I said, the growth is what I've always been curious about, is how is he going to continue to grow? And so much of that, again, I can't emphasize enough, because I felt this way with Coach Gibbs. You know, Coach Gibbs, you have to have a special relationship with the play caller. I'll give you an example, Kev, and this is what he has with Cliff. When a coach calls a play, it isn't just the play that's being called. There has to be an understanding of why. You know, are we taking a shot down the field on fourth down because we believe our defense can stop them and we can get the ball back, like we saw against Cincinnati? Are we going to be able to have a double? We've got an in on one side and a go on the other side. If the go flashes to you and you get single coverage, take it. And so, you know, your communication is so vitally important. Now, we used to have to do it in meeting rooms because we didn't have communicators in the helmets.
Right.
But I think that Jaden is continuing to understand when Cliff calls a play, you have to know why. Why is this being called? It's third and five. We're going to run the ball. We get the fourth and one. He called it because we're going to go for it. So those are the things that will continue to progress and grow in.
Well, I mean, as you were talking, the all-time why is the story you've told many times, and you've told it to me many times, is why are we calling rocket screen at the end of this half? We threw it against them earlier in the year. They know it's coming. And what did he say to you? He just said, run it.
Those were the last words out of my mouth, out of his mouth. And so the funny part of that was, you know, when I was standing on the sidelines too at Super Bowl 18, we were having that conversation before the end of the half. He says, "I want to run rocket screen. If I don't feel good about putting the ball in the air," he said, I want you to run it. It worked against them before. The first thought that went through my mind was, you don't think they know that?
Yeah.
From the same place almost on the field we ran this before. So they made the substitution. They took Matt Millen out and put Jack in. And, you know, the rest is, I guess, you know, it's
yeah,
more in history now. But
yeah.
Oh, yeah. But it really is. I think the communication, the understanding more than communication,
sure,
between Cliff and Jaden is very, very important.
Right. We're talking to Joe. You said, you know, you explained the sort of the adjustments. You know, with you, it was you liked to sort of sneak out the backside when you would scramble, and then all of a sudden there's a defensive end waiting for him. So what do you think the defensive coordinators, Jim Schwartz this week, then a really good defense in Baltimore's, they've got a good defense in Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh's down the road. What are the adjustments you would make as a defensive coordinator for Jaden's game?
I think what they'll do is I think they'll try and test him with pressure. And the other thing, we've been talking 20 minutes now, Kevin? And
about
one
15.
Of the things that's such a big difference in this football team is the offensive line.
Yep.
We haven't talked about the job that they have done. I mean, this really is, when you look at this football team over 4 weeks, this team is indicative of that TEAM, Together Everyone Achieves More, that acronym. That's what this football team is. Jaden, obviously, is the tip of the spear. But besides that, there's so many other elements. The defense is, Dan, I know, wants to get more takeaways, but they've been doing a stellar job, making them punt, giving them opportunities to be able to do something. I think with any young quarterback, now we're going to be at home, so it's a little bit different. But with any young quarterback, you want to see how he handles pressures. And Jim Schwartz is not shy when it comes to pressures. And Cleveland's a solid, solid defensive football team. This game here is one where Dan has to do his best job of talking to his football team and make them understand that the Browns are a viable National Football League team. They are not somebody that's just going to come strolling in here and you think you can't get ready to play and you think it's going to be anything but easy. Believe me, it'll be anything but easy. I think that's the big thing, is make these guys understand. Let's see, this is what we did. Let us set the tempo. Let us set the level of play. You don't want to play down or up to your opponent. You don't want to, oh, here comes a really good opponent, we have to play better. Oh, this opponent isn't that good. Okay, we'll just sort of show up, throw a hat in the ring. No, you set the standard for yourself. You set the standard for this team. Who are the Washington Commanders? They're setting the standard. And that's the way they play, irrespective of who's on the other side of the ball.
You guys were always in that mode. I mean, Joe would scare the hell out of the fan base when the Cardinals were coming in as 3-touchdown underdogs sure everybody understood you could lose. But it's a really good point about Cleveland, because this is the best defense they'll face since week one, and probably better than even Tampa's defense.
Yeah, Tampa didn't bring a lot of people. And of course it was a new experience for everyone, but Cleveland, like I said, Jim has notoriously been one that likes to bring pressure. Plus that defensive line has got some studs on it. I mean, this is going to be a great challenge for our football team. This is going to be one of those, we're going to sit down and take the test. And at the end of this thing, let's see where we are. And like I said, but we have to approach it with a standard of our own, not of someone else.
Yeah, it's also, just from a fan standpoint, I think after the last two games, this is the first game where the expectations are that they should win the game. It's been a long time since the expectations in any game was they should win the game. But I'm with you. I think this is a very more than viable defensively. The best player on the field might be Jaden Daniels, but if it isn't, it's Myles Garrett if he's on the field healthy. I wanted to ask you two more things real quickly. Number one, would you consider Davante Adams for this team right now?
No, not at all. Not at all. I don't know why you would, because he'd have to be brought up to speed on what things are doing. I think we have a very solid receiving core. I believe that these guys have built a chemistry through the OTAs, through the mini camps, through the training camps. It was the same thing, trying to bring, Ayuk from San Francisco. All that, they played together, Jaden and he played together at school, and it'd be great. No, you've got a very, very good football team. Here's the thing about Devon. He may not get it. How many catches is he going to get? This is the whole thing. You see these wide receivers, they go someplace, and then they get upset because they're not happy, so all of a sudden they want to be traded. They want out. Because, just figure out a way. Hey, if you're not getting the ball, go make some important blocks. They forget about the elements of the game that are a part of playing football. This was one of the great things about Art. If I didn't have Art in the game early, we couldn't get him early. You didn't have to worry about it. He was going to knock somebody out. He was going to go after somebody. He was going to be in the game with his head hitting people, blocking for John, blocking for Joe, clearing out for Donnie or Charlie. you know, and I think that, you know, obviously things aren't, you don't have what you want with the Raiders, so he wants out. But, you know, I'd love to see an owner just one time say, I ain't trading you. You can moan, you can pout, you can do whatever you want. You get healthy, I want you to play football. At the end of the year, we'll sit down and assess it. But now we got 11 football games. 13 football games. I keep forgetting how many we have. We have 13 football games. Get dressed and play football. And right now he has a hamstring. You know, if this thing goes past 3 weeks, it's more than just a hamstring. It's just that, I don't want to play. But you see guys demanding trades all the time. And the problem, one of the biggest problems we have in professional football is we don't have enough decent quarterbacks. Notice I didn't say good. I just said decent.
Yeah.
You know, you've got, look at Joe Flacco. Great opportunity again for Joe in Indianapolis. Look at Andy Dalton with the Carolina Panthers. Look at the difference in these football teams when you've got guys with experience that can play. But they're just, they're getting older. It's not going to happen next year. The young guys are going to have to step up and play. And so, for us as a football team, I don't think it would serve our football team well.
You only had Gary Clark for that 1 year, and that was the year you got injured.
Yeah.
Did you have a receiver that was super demanding, in your career that you had to manage?
Yeah, nobody, no. I was, our huddle wasn't a democracy, Kevin. It wasn't a democracy where we come in and we vote on who gets the ball.
Yeah, it was a dictatorship.
It was Joe. I mean, I didn't. Yeah. I had flexibility a little bit to change plays, but you see what we did. You didn't have the 50-50 catches. You didn't have the back shoulder catches. You didn't have rules where you couldn't get hit after 5 yards. Our game was a different game.
Sure.
And so Joe and the offensive staff and his genius design plays where if they did this, you go here. If they roll this way, you go there. I always had a place to go with the football. It was up to me to be able to read the defense and say, okay, this is where I'm going to go. It's a little bit different today. You know, we never worked out of the gun. I never worked. I worked out of the gun twice and got to live in
the daylight. You practiced it 1 week against the Bears in that playoff game, but didn't work out so well.
1 week. No, it did not. It was, and Coach Bugel, God bless him, he went to Coach Gibbs after that next year in 85 when we were playing the Raiders out in Los Angeles. And he just walked up to Joe and got in Joe's ear and he said, we just don't look good in the shotgun. You know, it takes John out of the game a little bit. It's just not who we are. He kept politicking for the guys up front to block for the running game. And God bless him. He was, I look back at the teams that I had a chance to be a part of, and it was more, it was the organization. It was everybody in the office. It was everybody that was there, our staff. It was the medical staff, the equipment staff, the coaches. It was a very unique time, and I get the sense that this time is coming back, Kevin. I really do. You know, I feel that there's a cohesiveness in this football organization that we haven't seen on the field. Obviously, the performances, yes, but inside the organization, that is, really establishing a solid foundation, and. Like I said, this is a huge game. I mean, 4-1 in the division, we've got Philly and Dallas going back to back coming up down the road a little bit. But, and then you're looking at Baltimore, who was a very nasty upset football team last week.
Oof.
And Buffalo was going to pay the price of their nastiness.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at the first two games, they should have won those as well.
All right, well, what you're talking about is a perfect segue into my last question, and that is, what's possible for this year? Not, clearly the arrow's pointing up organizationally, like you described. They've got a quarterback, it would appear. What's possible this year?
Progress and growth.
No, but seriously, you're 3-1, and if you're 4-1, now all of a sudden everything's on the table. The division's on the table, a home playoff game's on the table.
Nothing's on the table, Kevin. Nothing is on the table yet. It's 4 football games. You know, how healthy are we going to be able to stay? you know, what's weather? What is weather going to have to do with the games?
Yeah,
the big, you know, there's so many factors down the road that that influence football games. Officials' calls, Kevin. We saw that a few years ago in the Giant game when Terry asked the referee where he should line up. He moved him and then threw a flag.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, so for someone to say, "Oh, this football team can win 10 football games," they probably could. Maybe they can. But for the, I would be the last.
I'm not asking you to be conclusive. I'm asking you what's possible.
I wouldn't guess. Like I said, to me, growth and progress, that's possible. And if we continue with growth and progress, we're going to enjoy success.
One at a time. You know, now that you're coaching 9-year-olds, do you tell them we play this thing one play at a time?
One play at a time. Get your hands inside. We don't want any holding penalties. And run out. You got to see these little guys hit one another.
That age group is so much fun.
Oh, gosh. They're fearless. Good.
Is it
them,
flag or tackle?
Oh, it's tackle.
Yeah.
It's full out tackle. But
why didn't you ever coach? I mean, the broadcasting obviously was a massive, you know, career for you, but why didn't you ever decide to coach? Maybe this is another professional career you're on your way to. But seriously, because you would have been good.
I need another one, Kevin. I need another one. The reason I didn't is two names come to mind. George Allen and Joe Gibbs. Joe slept at Redskin Park three nights a week. I used to walk in Don Bro.
You like so golf too
I'd walk
much.
In for my morning meeting at 7:30, and Don Bro would be asleep in the meeting room on the floor. God, you know, I mean, he would just Bro is our running backs coach, but I mean, they'd stay up. They put in a game plan, but they'd kibitz and BS and chat forever, and then they finally get around to putting in game plans. But Coach Allen was the same way. They were tireless workers, and I think. You know, to be successful, you saw what Dick Vermeil has said. And, you know, one of the things, I'd love to see John Gruden back in our game. I really would. I think John is, you know, John's a terrific football coach with a great mind. We have a lot of great minds. I was thinking about the guys we've had in Washington, Sean McVay, Matt LaFleur,
Kyle Shanahan crew, yeah.
Kevin O'Connell. I mean, you know, but the thing was, it wasn't their time.
No, you know what I mean? The thing was the owner.
Well, you know, we won't get into that, but it wasn't necessarily their time. Now we've seen what they've grown into and what they have become. And I think probably one of the best jobs being done in football today is Matt LaFleur.
Oh, my God. The Malik Willis games. Ridiculous.
They're finding ways. And Miami is – here's one. I don't – where. Why won't Miami – now, I've heard two stories. One, Tannehill doesn't want to go someplace where he can't be a starter. Park your ego on the shelf, buddy, and go play football, if that's the case. Secondly, why in heaven's name has Miami not signed him?
I don't know. I mean –
because they don't – let me tell you, they don't stand a chance in the state they're in. And you talk about losing a football team with guys with egos, you're going to lose this football team in a very short period of time.
Yeah, you know, and you hate to say this because I think he is incredibly bright and creative and the whole thing, but, you know, when you've got that kind of quirky personality and that whole thing works when you're winning. And when you're not, all of a sudden it becomes annoying to fans and media types.
I don't look at it that way at all. I just think that, you know, like I said, we don't have enough quarterbacks as there is. The most viable out there is Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah.
Certainly an upgrade to where they are. You know, the other thing, and they traded for Mike White a few years ago from the Jets to bring him to Miami.
Right.
And then they get rid of him.
Do you think Tua will play again?
My personal feeling is he should not. I don't know what decision he will make, or sometimes when I think you're in a situation, Kevin, somebody has to make a decision for you. He's a warrior. He loves this game. He puts everything into this game. That drive will be what tells him he wants to keep on playing. But the young man's had five concussions. Five. I don't want to read one day that he's okay, he's going to play again, and all of a sudden his life is affected negatively because the decision was made for him to go back and play. He got, you know, economically he's going to be fine in his life. Not that that's the only reason you play the game, because I know for me it was a love of the game, and it's a love of the game for him. I know that. But I personally would be very worried, because he's going to get hit. He's going to hit his head. And remember, he ran into somebody's arm and wound up with this concussion.
Ugh.
It wasn't like his head hit the ground. You're a quarterback. You're going to throw the ball. All of a sudden, you hit the ground. Somebody tackles you and you hit the ground. You know, how will officials officiate Tua as a quarterback? There's a question for you, Kevin.
Yeah. Yeah, because see, here's the thing with Tua. A lot of players have had multiple concussions and are still playing. His were just so high profile, every one of them pretty much in prime time, and really looked ugly with the, I forget what they call that reaction, you know, when you're on your back and your arms go up.
And everything.
Yeah. All right. You know,
But Kev, the thing is, to your point, is I don't know of any guys that have had five concussions and are continuing to play. I know guys that have had three and have walked away. I mean, you're really starting to play Russian roulette right now. You're spinning the chamber, and you don't know. Like I said, at the position that he's at, he is going to hit his head. His head is going to hit the ground. Somebody is going to come in and inadvertently hit it. Not intentionally, obviously. But it's inevitable that he cannot avoid that situation that he will be walking back into.
No, I hear you. You know what, not really switching subjects entirely, but one of the things, you know, there were people that would say, yeah, he's okay. Look at Miami without him. They cannot score. They cannot move the football.
He is a
valuable player. You know, I keep you for so long, and it's because I enjoy it. But I just saw that you tweeted out something, and I just want to ask you real quickly, unless you've got to get to the first tee, which, you know, typically is the case.
I'm pulling weeds.
Oh, okay. Sure you are. You tweeted about Pete Rose yesterday. You wrote, gone as a friend, a person I always enjoyed visiting with. Pete, thank you for always making time. Rest in peace. You were friendly with Pete Rose?
Yeah, we've done autograph sessions together. I saw Pete, I believe it was Cleveland. We did one in Cleveland a couple of months ago. I'm trying to think, 6 weeks or a month ago, we had a chance. I was walking out of the hotel. We were on our way over to the show, and Pete was sitting on a bench, and I just walked over and sat down, and we'd always had cordial conversations, and we'd always talk in general. How you doing? I know he's out, you know, he had a residency out in Vegas, and had told me, you know, I get by, I'll run by and see him and all that stuff. Said, yeah, come on by, stop by. So we'd have casual conversations, I guess you could say. I would say he was a friend.
Yeah.
You know, we do all these shows, and you get to meet so many wonderful guys.
Sure.
You know, and I just think that, Pete's the greatest, if not the greatest hitter that we've ever seen in the game. And, you know, for some reason, he's not recognized at that level. And he knows what he did. And we all know what he did. But, somehow, some way, somewhere, maybe he winds up in the hall with some of the other guys that are the greatest in this game. And, you know, I didn't necessarily know that the hall was a hall of angels. But
that's
not
true. Yeah, it is not. Great catching up. I hope you're well, and good luck with that 9-year-old team.
Thank you. We got a big one tonight. We got a big one tonight. We play.
All right. Well, go get them. What are you running? The single wing?
We got Detroit tonight. We actually single wing. We throw a little bit. Now we're working on pulling a guard. This is going to be a big leap for us. We got to fill with the halfback and pull a guard.
There you go. All right. Good luck. Thanks for doing this as always.
Yeah, take care. Bye-bye.
All right, Joe Theismann, everybody. Eric Edholm from NFL Network will join us at noon. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app. This from Quan. Quan tweeted me, your Brian Robinson makes his first Pro Bowl is dead on arrival. Check out the NFC running backs. So I did, and he is right. First of all, hopefully that's not a knock on Brian Robinson Jr.'s start to this season. He's been outstanding to start this season. He is currently 10th overall in rushing yards. He's top five, I haven't checked it this week, in yards after contact. And I think in terms of big runs, which would be, I think, 12-plus yards, he was top five in that, I think, going into this week. He's having a very good season, but yes, here are the NFC backs right now ahead of him. Jordan Mason, Saquon Barkley, Alvin Kamara, Josh Jacobs, Aaron Jones. I mean, that's five backs right there that not only have gotten off to really good starts in what has been a very hot start to rushing the football in 2024, but they're very recognizable names as well. And then, you know, there are guys behind them. I mean, look at Montgomery in Detroit. Walker the third in Seattle just got back. He's legit. So I get your point. The NFC is loaded with backs that are all sort of Pro Bowl caliber. You know, right now, the best back in the league is Derrick Henry, and it's the best fit for him. But I'm looking at, where is Brian Robinson Jr. on? Yeah. Yeah, 10th overall, but he would be, you know, NFC-wise, he would be right now 6th in rushing. It's going to get a lot of opportunities. There are a lot of games ahead. But I like the job Brian Robinson Jr. is doing so far. I think Brian Robinson Jr. was underrated coming into this year. He wasn't utilized in the way all of us thought he should be last year. And, you know, he's got two 100-yard-plus games. He's averaging 4.7 yards per carry. Let me see where that ranks in terms of yards per carry in the NFC. Taking out the receivers. In terms of every down back, man, Eckler's averaging 6.4. Tyler Algier, one of my favorites, he's averaging over 6 yards per carry. But in terms of the guys with, you know, the most attempts, Saquon Barkley at 6 yards per carry. Brian Robinson Jr. at 4.7 yards per carry. Still, that's excellent. You know, anytime you're 4.5+, that is really, really solid as an average. But you got some guys that are off to hot starts. Jordan Mason's averaging 5 yards per carry. Barkley at 6. Aaron Jones is averaging 5 yards per carry. The kid in Carolina, Hubbard, Chuba Hubbard, is averaging 5.5 yards per carry. That team, by the way, they played Cincinnati pretty tough. They're completely different with, you know, Andy Dalton at quarterback. Joe Theismann is 100% right. Just considering, you know, the veteran quarterbacks that are out there, the Colts will be much better off moving forward if Flacco is the starting quarterback. Anthony Richardson is just not ready. We're so lucky right now, you know, knock on wood, that Jaden Daniels is a much, much, much sooner rather than later rookie quarterback, young quarterback, because most don't do what he's doing. C.J. Stroud did last year, but not even at this level. You know, in looking back, by the way, at Stroud last year, he did not start off. I'm pulling up his game log from last year because I remember they opened with Baltimore, and he was not that great super early in the year, not like Jaden was. His first game was the Ravens, and he didn't turn the ball over, didn't throw any touchdowns, took 5 sacks. In his second game, which was a loss to the Colts, he took six sacks. He did throw for 384 in the second game. And then all of a sudden, the sack total dropped, and he got on a major league roll. And the game of the year for him, the one that really announced his arrival, was that incredible shootout with Tampa Bay when he threw for 470, 5 touchdowns, no picks, and a 39-37 win. But it started a little rough. Now, Baltimore, really good for your first game. Indy, defensively, not that bad. And then he had Pittsburgh in the fourth game last year. Yeah, it takes some time. But, yeah, thank you, Quan, for that. Good point. I hadn't really checked it out in terms of where Brian Robinson's position was among NFC backs, but the position appears to be loaded. He could have a really, really good year. He could have the year that I, you know, essentially predicted, which was 1,200-plus yards on the ground, his best year of his career, and not be close to the Pro Bowl because of all of the other backs in the league. This from Jeremy Fowler at ESPN. He wrote that Jaden Daniels' impressive start is not a surprise to people inside the Commanders building. As one person with the team pointed out about his accuracy, the ball barely touched the grass all spring. It's not just that he's special, but he's constantly working to get better. A separate team source said he's in the building early and he's a tone setter that way. Of course, we have heard that. Fowler writes, Daniels' maturity on and off the field is why the team isn't worried about difficulties with him handling success. I said something to Theismann there at the end, to Joe at the end, and I think that this is true. Maybe you guys agree, maybe you don't. But I think this game on Sunday is the first game in a while. I mean, we probably have to go back to 2022 when they were 7-5 at one point. But it is the first game in a while that I think most NFL fans and even most of our fans, I think, look, we got to separate ourselves out of this, that most NFL fans will expect Washington to win the game. They did not necessarily expect them to beat Arizona. Arizona was favored in the game. They certainly didn't expect Washington to beat Cincinnati. The Giants, they were, you know, pummeled in week one by Tampa. That line was, remember, super short. Washington was just a one-point favorite. They're only a three-point favorite Sunday. Yes, I do think that Washington is going to be a major public side this week. But I do think just the general perception of NFL fans and NFL pundits for the first time in a long, long time will be Washington should win this game. Let's see how they handle that. I don't think it's a should-win game. I don't think they've arrived at that point because of their defense and because they haven't faced a really good defense since week one. The Giant defense is talented. You know, I will give them that. And they played well, except for the opener, but that was more about the offense couldn't produce anything against Minnesota's defense. But you're going to get tested by Jim Schwartz and the Browns defense. You're going to get tested in, you know, a week and a half at M&T Bank against the Ravens. So, I don't think anything at this point is should win, although I will admit that even though they're playing better defenses, I would be surprised if the offense took a major step back. Are they going to be as lights out as they've been the last 2 weeks where they've punted once, or the last 3 weeks where they've punted one time, where they're converting third downs at an insane level, where the quarterback is, you know, on, you know, right now, historically, a pace from a completion percentage standpoint that will shatter the NFL record? I don't see that necessarily, but how can't you be confident that we're going to see an offense that moves the ball and score points against anybody? But it's really the first time. Like, there wasn't a game last year. Was there really a game last year that you felt? I'll give you the game. When they played Chicago on Thursday Night Football, because they were 2-2 and they had played Philadelphia, remember, super close, had lost in overtime. You know, they won their first two games last year. And they got crushed by Buffalo, and then, you know, Sam Howell and the offense played well, and they lost the overtime game in which, you know, Ron didn't go for two at the end of the game to win the game. It wasn't a go for two. You know, it was a little bit different in that situation at the end of regulation. But that Thursday night, a lot of people thought Washington should win the game. That was a Chicago smell test pick. I do remember that. And it wasn't close that night. They got destroyed. And then after that, I don't think there was, I don't know, maybe the Giants were so bad it was a should-win game, but they didn't win either one of those games. But, you know, for a team that is 3-1 for the first time since 2011, this seems and feels like a game with the expectations that they will win. By the way, if you're wondering when the last time this team was 4-1, it was the Jim Zorn first year in 2008. They lost the opener to the Giants, and then they beat the Saints. Remember that bomb from Jason Campbell to Santana Moss? They beat the Cardinals. They beat the Cowboys and Eagles back-to-back games on the road, and they were 4-1. And they came home and promptly lost to the Rams at home 19-17. But it had been since 2011 that they were 3-1. It's been since 2008, 16 seasons since they started off 4-1. Of course, that season ended pretty poorly at 8-8. That was the year, remember, Pittsburgh's fans came in and took over the stadium. The Cowboys fans came in and took over the stadium on back-to-back night games. And who was the Cowboys running back that ran it right down? Marion Barber. Was it Marion Barber who basically, you know, got 10 carries at the end of the game and just kept going for like 5 yards a carry? I think it was him. Clay, was it Marion Barber? Pretty sure it was Marion Barber. All right, when we come back, Eric Edholm from the NFL Network will join us. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the Team980.com. We're also free and live on the Odyssey app.